In my most distant memory of my grandfather, he is on the beach at Ostend. A man of 66, in a neat midnight blue suit, he has dug a shallow pit with his grandson's blue shovel and levelled off the heaped sand around it so that he and his wife can sit in relative comfort. He has slightly raised the sandbank behind them for shelter from the August wind, which blows over the receding line of waves and out to sea under high wisps of haze. They have removed their shoes and socks and are gently wiggling their toes as they sit, enjoying the cool damp of the deeper sand. An activity that struck me at the age of 6 as uncharacteristically frivolous, for this couple always dressed in grey, dark blue, or black. Even on the beach, and despite the heat, my grandfather keeps his black fedora on his nearly bald head. He is wearing his spotless white shirt and, as always, a black bow tie, a large one, larger than bow ties normally are, with two ends dangling over his chest, making it look, from a distance, as though his neck were adorned with the silhouette of a black angel spreading its wings. My mother made his peculiar bow ties according to his instructions, and in all his long life, I never saw him without one of those black ties with tails like a dress coat. He must have owned dozens. There's one here somewhere among my books, a relic of a far forgotten age. After half an hour, he made up his mind to take off his jacket. Then he removed his gold cufflinks and put them in his left pocket. Next, he went so far as to roll up his shirt sleeves, or rather, he carefully folded them over, twice, to a point just under his elbow, each fold exactly the width of the starched cuff. And now he sits with his neatly folded jacket draped over his arm, its silk lining gleaming in the afternoon light, as if he is posing for an impressionist portrait. His gaze seems to wander over the distant crowd, losing its way among the shrieking, splashing children, the shouting, laughing day-trippers chasing after each other as if they were children again. What he sees is something like a James Ensor painting set in motion, although he despises the work of that Ostend blasphemer with the English name. Ensor is a dauber, and along with tosspot and riffraff, dauber is the worst accusation he can make. They're all daubers, today's painters. They've completely lost touch with the classical tradition, the subtle, noble craft of the old masters. They muddle along with no respect for the laws of anatomy, don't even know how to glaze, never mix their own paint, use turpentine like water, and are ignorant of the secrets of grinding your own pigments, of fine linseed oil and the blowing of siccatives. No wonder there are no more great painters. The wind is growing colder now. He retrieves his cufflinks from his pocket, rolls down his sleeves, neatly fastens his cuffs, puts on his jacket, and tenderly drapes his wife's black lace mantilla over her shoulders and over the lustrous knot in her dark grey hair. "Come, Gabrielle," he says, and they stand, pick up their shoes, and with some effort begin the ascent to the promenade, he with the legs of his trousers rolled up 6 inches or so, she with her long black socks stuffed into her shoes. Under their dark forms, I see their 4 white calves swinging, slow and measured, over the sand. They make their way to the blue stone steps that lead to the promenade, where they will sit down on the nearest bench, brush and pat off the sand until their feet are thoroughly clean, pull their black socks over their alabaster feet, and tie their shoes with what they call drawstrings instead of laces. As for me, after the collapse of the warren of tunnels that I dug for my large stone marbles, my treasured tours, I run shivering to my mother. "The tide is rising again," she says, rubbing the warmth back into me as the first puffy clouds form over the dunes behind us. The wind sweeps over the dune tops, as if to muss their grassy hair, and those large, sand-coloured creatures brace themselves for the night ahead. My grandfather, his gleaming cane of varnished elm wood already in his hand, is waiting restlessly for us to reach the promenade. Then he takes the lead. He is not a tall man, 5'6", I often hear him say, but wherever he goes, people make way. With his head erect, his black boots polished to perfection, a sharp crease in his trousers, arm in arm with his unspeaking wife and his cane in the other hand, he strides out ahead of us with slight impatience, glancing back now and then and calling out that we'll miss our train if we don't pick up the pace. He walks like a retired soldier, which is to say, not pounding his heels oafishly into the ground, but always landing on the ball of the foot, as a soldier should, the habit of more than half a century. Then he somehow slips out of view in my memory, and overcome by the sudden radiant clarity of this scene from all those years ago, I'm so tired I could fall asleep on the spot.